And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 746, continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. And we head to the desert to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks. In order to talk about the D-backs, I got two of my favorite guys out here. I call them brothers from another mother because I mean it. These are some of the greatest ones here. I've known them for quite some time, had the privilege to meet them. You can find their works at Fantasy Pros, at Betting Pros. But where I know them, and most of us know them from originally, ITL, in this league, everybody. These are the boys. You can find them on Twitter. Is it the Welsh Chris Welsh? And my buddy on Twitter at Bogman Sports, Scott Bogman. How y'all doing, gentlemen?
Doing great.
What's up, Bubba? What's up?
Doing great. Ready for some baseball, man. Yeah, I'm going out to Florida to see one of my friends and get a little grapefruit action league in a couple weeks, and then on to Arizona for opening day to see the, you know, 2025 World Series champion Diamondbacks open up, of course. We all know that. Corbin Burns edition has us very excited here. We are ready to go.
What about you, Welshie? How are we doing?
Doing good, buddy. Just out on the backfields. I'm a little burnt. Every time I see the videos I do, look at this. Like, you can see that. Like,
ooh. I got to wear this red shirt just to keep up.
Yeah, like, I'm just getting burnt on the backfields, just trying to, you know, go and check out the boys, see what's going on all the Arizona side, and getting in these drafts, doing tout, and, you know, just getting to the dirty work, doing lots of content over on Fantasy Pros, of course, ITL, and missing that bald head right there. I got a lot of the bald heads in my life, but missing that bald head right there, Bubba. It's a wolf pack is back. The three best friends anyone could ever have.
It is for an hour or so today. It's definitely back. And yeah, we'll get some more stuff going, I have a feeling, in the coming days. Actually, I'll be seeing you for sure, Welsh, in a couple weeks.
That's right. Yeah, I'll be on the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Fest. Bubba and the Bloom going to be making an appearance. That'll be great.
Yeah, and if anybody lives under a rock and doesn't know ITL for some beyond bizarre reason, just go to their Patreon, folks. Support the boys because they deserve it. So check them out. They're the, like I said, they're the OGs that got this party started, especially in the Patreon world. Like, you guys are like the first ones there. You're like the only fans of Patreon. It's pretty crazy.
So, definitely one of the OGs. Yeah, we were talking like 11 years we've been doing ITL. Yeah. So it's like, it is wild that we've been in this space still. Plenty of people have no idea who we are or anything like that, and that's all good. But like, ITL to keep rolling for 11 years is pretty impressive. And that, Bubba, I mean, you were right around the same general space, maybe a few years behind or something like that. We've all been we all been chugging along.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's get the party started here. Let's talk D-backs, because last time I actually got to watch a D-backs game live, I was with you lovely gentlemen in Arizona for a World Series
that didn't end so well.
No. Didn't end so well, but it was great to see you all because it allowed me to see Bogman and go see Dan Soder, and it was just a phenomenal week and all things considered. But we'll start with you, Welsh, and then we'll get Bogman's thoughts here. What were your thoughts on how 2024 went?
Well, man, that's a loaded freaking question. It's a disappointment. I mean, the team didn't perform, obviously, at the level prior. Corbin Carroll's struggles, I thought, really were probably the biggest carrying card. I mean, you know, Walker was as he does. Ketel Marte was off. There were a lot of huge positives. You know, Jake McCarthy, I thought, took a big step. I was just talking with Frank Stanfield. We were texting about late round stuff, and he's like, can I ask you a Diamondback question about McCarthy? I know we'll probably talk about him. I'm like, yes. Get in on McCarthy. You had many positives, but in your face were the two biggest. The team narrative was a failure. They were not able to even come close to repeating the success. And a lot of that was centered around Corbin Carroll taking a massive step back. Luckily, he did end the season really well. It looked like, oh my God, we might have a lost cause on our hands. Like, he had that big hole in the upper inside of his swing that everybody kept annihilating. There was the shoulder thing, and it's like, yo, were we wrong? And then he had this fantastic second half where, you know, he ended up getting over 20 homers, still stole a bunch of bases, and the average kind of dipped down. So yeah, I would say, like, if you were grading it, it was probably a C, you know, or maybe a C plus at best for the Diamondbacks. Yet I would say the expectation from a grading scale is much higher this year, with Carroll bouncing back, having a good spring, and Corbin Burns, you know, being thrown into the fray. It really changes the dynamic of what this team should be. But C plus, and, you know, I think anything under a B plus overall score this year would be another failure.
Yeah, when it comes to Corbin Carroll, we almost wanted to blame it on where in the world is Welsh and Carroll, because it all went downhill after that. But it came back to life. Boggs, what were your thoughts on the season?
Yeah, like Welsh said, overall on the team aspect, it was disappointing. Coming off the World Series, it was a clear World Series hangover. Bad, you know, Gallen was probably overworked in 23, and you could see it in 24.
Yeah,
Corbin Carroll was awful. For the first half, Eugenio Suarez almost got cut and then had a huge monster second half. I think the positives were, like Welsh said, McCarthy really kind of proved himself and solidified himself as part of the outfield. And Ketel Marte had just a ridiculous season. So that was really good. Brandon Pfaadt was pretty solid. Justin Martinez closed out the year very well. So there were positives individually, but as a whole, it was a pretty bad year for the D-backs. And you know, narrowly missing the playoffs is not good enough when you were just in the World Series. So, like Welsh said, an overall letdown, couple nice performances from individuals, but team context was pretty bad.
You said something interesting, too, just to say, like, if you look at it, like, from a fantasy perspective, two of the three biggest fantasy pieces on that team, huge failures. Ketel Marte finally kind of lived up to that, like, the underlying, you know, hitting metric expectations, and he was an MVP candidate. But Gallen was massively disappointing. Carroll was massively disappointing. And, you know, 2-3 on the big drop downs just made this team, you know, have probably a lot of potential fantasy assets for this season, because I think people are down in general. Ironically, Carroll, just no discount. There's just absolutely no discount at all. Dude didn't even hit 240 last year, and there is zero discount on him this year. But almost every other Diamondback, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, I think every other single one is like a deal. Gallen's a deal. Josh Naylor looks like a deal. The outfielders look like a deal. Pavin Smith is a huge, I mean, we'll talk about all these guys, but outside of Carroll, every single one is a really good discount for you to buy in on this year. And hopefully some are going to pay off. I guess Marte's not either, but
yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see at the price tags how that all pays off. I'm with you there. I have shares we'll talk about shortly, a few of them. But I want to start with you, Boggs. We'll start Ketel Marte, because this is a guy you've gone to bat for in the past, especially on these previews where I'm kind of like torn on, you know, the back history, this and that, and took another step forward last year, hit 292 with 36 bombs, still stole like 8 bags, which was great. But as Welsh was saying there, his ADP is 30. So in a 12-team league, it's round 3. On a 15, it's the round 2-3 turn. Where are we at on Ketel Marte this season? Because I still have trouble clicking the button at that price.
Yeah, Ketel Marte is part of my strategy. If I'm picking high in the first round, one of the top 4 to 5 picks, my second-round pick, I want Ketel because of the health of second base this year. I don't like a lot of what second base has to offer for us in fantasy, and I saw what Ketel Marte had. Now, you know, with my type of luck that I have, he will definitely get hurt this year because I'm rostering him all over the place. But he had such a huge year last year. He's just so far and away the best second baseman that I am making him part of my strategy. And you know, the numbers don't lie. Had an excellent season last year. Hit 292, 36 bombs, even threw in 7 swipes, almost went 100-100, 93 runs, 95 RBI. So to me, the only issue with Ketel at all is staying healthy. 136 games, missed a little stretch in the back half of the season there with, I think it was a foot injury, but came back and wasn't slow to come back either. Was great when he jumped back in. So yeah, Ketel is definitely a strategy piece that I like to have.
Anything else to add on Ketel, Welsh? Because yeah, Boggs has always been that guy. I'll never, ever take that away from him.
Yeah, I mean, I love Ketel. I do think it's a little tough to stomach, like, the ADP, because, like, yes, Ketel maybe has a consistency, but I will say that I think that other core that isn't there, I mean, the reason Ketel's at the top, it's because it's like, whoa, he completely overdid expectations. But all those other guys are decent deals. Like, Altuve is not expensive. Albies is not expensive. I think if you're willing to take the risk, Marcus Semien might be one of the better deals at like near outside the top 75, and he's a 2020 guy. So like that makes it hard to stomach, but you know, Ketel made some major strides. Yeah, Boggs said he hit 292. He didn't expect a batting average. It was higher. It was 294. That was one of the best in the league, top 4 percentile. He reached that by barreling more balls, hitting the ball harder consistently. That was always his thing. We always joked about as Diamondback fans. We're like, this dude, like I'm looking right now, this dude has had a 115 or higher max EV 7 straight years. He's been in the top of the league, but he has not consistently got to it because you had like 88 average X velocity, 90, 91. All of a sudden this year,
switch 94. Hit it too. More yeah. power from the left side, which, you know, he's usually batting from the right.
Well, and that's another interesting aspect to it, too, is like he's going to lead off against lefties. He hit 340 against lefties this year. So he is going to be the primary leadoff guy there. He might also be against righties. They might move him around. So maybe that affects the RBI. I think he's safe, chalk. Like, I think where you're taking him, you're like, oh, I'm going to get 30 homers. I'm going to get 90-90. I'm going to get a good batting average. The Diamondbacks, they move, man. You know, Carroll, when he gets on base, he's scoring. McCarthy's stealing bases. These guys are scoring runs. This is how the Diamondbacks play, and that works really well for Marte. But, like, if you compare an ADP of 80 to Marcus Semien to Cattell having to take in, like, the second round, I don't know, man. Like, I might, it depends what players are around. I wouldn't say he's a smashing deal, but I do think he is safe because that hitting profile looks way better than the other guys. It is not close barrel, not close hard hit. He's hitting for high average. He doesn't have these big swings, and it's a high offensive motor going on here. So I like that, but like, am I pounding the table for Cattell? I'm not so sure.
And I have, I would say second base, there's like, to me, you look at the top seven, and after that, it gets really wonky. So there might be some better deals, but it's limited. You know, you're in a 15-man league. That's less than half. So I just want to get a second baseman early, and that's why I have Cattell pretty high in my rankings.
Yeah, it's kind of the two philosophies. Like, you're saying you're taking one high. I'll just wait and take the – I'll basically almost punt the position, weirdly enough, and just take that glob at the bottom. I'm not saying it's the right answer by any means, but that's probably why I don't have Cattell. And to Welsh's point, I kind of seem like I'll just wait for Semien at that point if I'm going to take one early. That's why it's just hard for me to click Cattell. There's nothing against him. I also drafted the back end of the first round, it feels like. So I don't have a lot of chances to draft Cattell Marte these days, which also fluctuates there. A player I have had chances to draft, and he is my second, like, most rostered first-round pick. It's either Kyle Tucker or Corbin Carroll. That's who I keep drafting if I have a first-round option, essentially, if I'm, like, pick five or beyond. That's where we're going in this draft. And Corbin Carroll's ADP is 8.5 over the last couple weeks on the NFBC Welsh. So, like you said, this spring, he's already got two homers and two steals. Dude's just mashing. What are we thinking this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable to be back. If you want to go with what are we thinking, you could start by looking at where some of the projections are. ATC, our friend Ariel, 257 average, 23 homers, 39 stolen bases. So you're close into a 25-40 season. That alone is going to put you in like a first round projectable place. He ended last year. It's funny because it looks like the projections mirror the second half. He was 17 homers, 17 stolen bases, and 258 average. I really do truly think that Corbin Carroll can hit for higher average. I think he was pressing. Something that annoyed me last year. And maybe it worked. Maybe at the end of the day, we have to look at it as working. But he kept saying, like, I got to hit through this. I got to hit through this. That was his thing. Everyone's like, what's up with the shoulder? What's this? I did a show, like a 20-minute show, where we looked at just the hitting zone charts. And you could look. And it's like, look, see, inside, he cannot hit anything in inside. And everyone was hitting him inside. And then they would hit him with some breaking pitch, and he couldn't do anything with it. I think he's a super smart, analytical hitter. I think he's learned from that. I think the spring is a really good sign. There was an offseason of health able to revamp. He is one of the fastest, most aggressive base stealers in baseball. The 2024 version of who he was as a hitter, I'm not sure was representative because he hit like 213 and 230-something versus righties and lefties. In his rookie year, he was 280 across the board on both. Like, he did this in the minors. He can hit lefties. So I think you might get back to some higher batting average. I think he has more upside there. I think he's stealing 40 bases. I think he's hitting 20 homers. I think he's a first-round pick. And, you know, runs are a funny thing to look at in fantasy sometimes. But, like, Bogman and I were talking about how maybe more valuable a guy like Stephen Kwan is, even though he doesn't put up you know, big counting stats when you can get elite runs. Corbin Carroll is one of those guys that it's like, yeah, maybe the RBIs aren't there, but you might get two elite of elite categories and four that are well above average in play. So if you get 25, 40, 100 plus runs, and even like a 270 average, 70 RBIs, I mean, that's a first round talent. I'm very much in on Corbin being a first round pick. I'd love to pair him. I mean, it's gone now. You probably know this, Bubba, but like, there was this very early stage in like NFBC and stuff where you could like go Carol and Julio. And that was like really cool. That's kind of gone. But the funny thing is Julio has been the separator. He's going way further back. Carol is getting pushed. I think you said like 8. He's being pushed inside the top 10 where he was sitting around 12, 13, something like that. So I think people are a buy back in on it. And I'm the resident Corbin Carroll homer. So I do believe that second half was a great sign. This spring is a great sign. And I think he's going to get right back into that rookie of the year fold.
Yep, no convincing needed here. What about you, Boggs? Anything to add to the Corbin Carroll love fest?
I mean, listen, we all agree that it was a down year for Corbin Carroll, and he was fifth in the league in runs. He had 121 runs.
The final stat line is still very good.
Yeah.
How exactly. many guys – that would be a fun thing to do. How many guys have hit 230 and been in the top 100 five runs? Yeah, actually just 100 runs. Who has hit 230 and had 100 runs scored? I can't imagine that list is massively very long. Yeah.
Right. So we say that, and I think Steve Gilbert just put out a good article on Corbin Carroll making mechanical adjustments. He's pointing the bat a little bit higher to pull it through the zone a little bit faster. He had one spring homer in his career going into this year, and he already has two, and he hit a grand slam yesterday. So, maybe there's a little bit more pop in that bat. Maybe that's to get to that zone that Welsh was mentioning that he wasn't able to get to last season. So I think, like Welsh said, Corbin Carroll is an extremely smart, analytical player. He knows that he has to work through things, and he knows adjustments need to be made constantly, and he's going to work to do those and to get better. So, yeah, I have every confidence that he is going to be a first round player, regardless of where you get him. Like you guys said, it's getting closer to, right behind Tucker instead of at the end of the first or towards the back end now that he's made these adjustments and we're seeing this payoff in spring. So yeah, I mean, I think the helium is just going to continue to rise the better the spring gets for him.
And something to watch for too. I didn't realize this must've just popped up, but Baseball Savant, I love all the stuff you can track on Baseball Savant for better, for worse, and what it actually helps you with and what it doesn't. But I really dove into bat tracking last year, a whole bunch. We're looking at swing length and speed and stuff like that. And I just noticed they put 2023 bat tracking data, and I don't remember there being 2023 bat tracking data.
They came out with, it's only the second half, but they have it.
No. Okay. But see, so okay. I love that, because one of the things I talked about last year was like, oh my gosh, when we could start looking at year over year data to see
where then we'll know what it's actually worth.
Yeah. Well, check this out. I know this may seem minuscule, but from 23 to 24, his swing got longer. Corbin Carroll's swing got longer from the end of 2023 through the whole season of 2024, where he was under 7 and in 2023, and he was closer to league average this past year. So something to look for is if that swing length gets shorter again by bringing the bat up and having a shorter path. He is already an above average bat speed average in the league is 71.5. He was 73.7 last year. So that quick swing and a shorter path is going to probably equate to really good results. I would bet he knows that. And I would bet he also saw that his swing got longer, even if it's 0.02, that's still enough. If you go from 6.8 to 7, that's noticeable enough that if he gets that path shorter, it could really equate to good results for a guy like this who does barrel up the ball. So a lot of stuff like Corbin Carroll, but it's kind of deserved. We're all still big buyers.
Yep, no doubt about it. New Diamondback, Christian Walker out of town. Josh Naylor slots on in there, coming off a career season in Cleveland. And it's interesting. There's some people are still like, oh, he's worth every penny at ADP 101 right now. There's other people saying, well, Cleveland, great for lefty power. Arizona, not so much. They're bringing all these kind of what-ifs in here. Bogman, where are you at on Josh Naylor?
Yeah, I have him, I think, one spot below ECR at first base. I think I have him at 8. His ECR is 7. Still very good player, right? And I don't think that it's going to – maybe the power comes down a touch, but 31 bombs and 108 RBI. The lineup context is still great. I'd like to see the average come up just a little bit. I'd also, like to see him be a little more svelte than he is. But I'm excited about Josh Naylor. I am going to miss Christian Walker because I love the defensive side as well. But for fantasy, I don't think you're getting too big of a step back for Josh Naylor. I think he's going to be fine. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for to drive in runs with Marte and Carroll ahead of him. I think the lineup behind him is going to be decently solid as well. So I guess I do wonder a little bit about moving from the AL to the NL and adjusting to new pitchers. And is he going to start slow? I guess that would be my question. Is he going to have, you know, a little bit of a slow start out the gate? But I think he'll find his rhythm. He seems to really like Arizona. And I am, if we had to get rid of Walker, I am excited to bring in a guy like Naylor. I think he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I've always been a Naylor fan. I've had any trouble with that ADP. Nothing against a Naylor, but Welch, what are your thoughts on Naylor?
What do you not like about the ADP at like 100?
I guess it's where I'm looking at other players in that range that I'm
okay, like Vinny, Vinny's like 20 spots.
Well,
lower,
not even Goldie, first base 60. Per se. Like I might be getting like an SP2 or like there's other things where I'm focused in that range. So I haven't been like jumping to get Naylor. And you got Vinny P, not really a Costas guy as much as others. And there's like good, like I love Jake Berger.
There's a couple like good that. Deals yeah. at first. Yeah.
That's where I'm kind of that. At. That's kind of where I'm at on. Because trust me, I have pounded the drum. Like do Bubba, Naylor, BD Intric, whatever on Twitter. And you'll see posts from years ago. I've been all in on Josh Naylor for quite some time. But Welch, yeah. thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think I have a pro. This is one of those things. Bogman, we were talking about this the other day, or maybe it was me and Joe, where it's like we might have different like thought processes, but we get to the same result at the end.
Right, right.
Where I think I agree partially, Bubba. I actually don't disagree. I don't think the ADP is an issue, but I also like the people that are around. I don't find myself taking Naylor because of the people around. So we kind of end in the same path on that spot. Yep. I do think, you know, you can look at like a potential power suppression of Arizona. The home run factor, it's funny because if you do the if you look at Baseball Savant and you look at the 3-year rolling, there's really not that much of a difference between Arizona and Cleveland. I think they're back-to-back in overall left-handed home run ballpark factor. Homers are a little bit in favor of Cleveland. But the 1 year when they opened up the wall and balls are traveling for lefties and stuff, so the ball is traveling more in Cleveland. But Arizona is still an overall top 10 ballpark factor for left-handed hitters. They're number 9 over this last year. And Naylor's an RBI machine on a team that is one of the most hyper-aggressive run-scoring teams. And what has been the best thing about Naylor over the last couple of years has been these monster RBI numbers. Yep. The guy has over 200 RBIs over the last two seasons combined. So does he taper back and hit – if he hits 25 homers and he's going to have 100 RBI and his batting average is going to sit around, you know, the 260, 270, he's going to beat ADP. To your point, am I pounding the drum that you have to get Josh Naylor? Not necessarily, because I love Christian Walker. I have Christian Walker way higher in Houston now. Me I think too. He's a freaking monster. And to overdraft Naylor, it doesn't make sense when Costas is out there. And you don't like Costas that much. Vinny Pasquantino. I love Jake Berger and Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt I don't in mind New York. At all. So that's what makes him a little bit tricky. Based on those players, but I think like as a draftable asset, I'm down with Naylor. Projections on ATC have him at 22 homers, 90 RBI, and hitting 263. He's also a low strikeout guy, which you love to see. I think he could beat a little bit of that. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 270. I wouldn't be surprised if he has 25 homers and 100 RBI. So I think he beats his ADP expectations. It's just there are some of these positions, second base we just talked about. There's some great deals. First base, unfortunately, there's some great deals around there. And if you give me at cost, I will take Christian Walker around before. Yeah. I'll eat the value on what Naylor cost me to take Christian Walker right now. So I like him, but agreed, there are some other players around his ADP that I'm targeting more.
All right, those are the elite players on the team, I'd say. But we're still some very good players, and we'll start with Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who I actually – got for $8 in a listener league auction last night. Pretty pumped on that. Batting average asset, but pretty, like, just solid is what I'll say. Nothing crazy when it comes to Lourdes. His ADP right now is 232. I'll start kicking off with you, Welch. Where are you at on Lourdes Gurriel?
Yeah, the only thing that's keeping me back from, like, being like, holy crap, this is just a really great ADP value. The team openly just like a day or two ago mentioned that they feel they need to get him more rest. They need him to rest more, that he wore down. You saw categorically, like he did come down year over year, close to the same at bats, 6 homers less. He hit for a higher batting average. You know, I mean, it's minuscule, but the power downtick was noticeable, at least that he went under the, you know, under the 20 marker. He was great against lefties. He struggled-ish against righties, only hitting 250 while hitting 331. The Diamondbacks found a system where they absolutely love playing the right side platoons. And it worked with Jock Peterson and Randall Grichuk. They got like a superstar out of those two players. If you just put them together, Jock hit 280 with 22 homers against lefties, and Randall Grichuk was great. They brought Grichuk back. Pavin Smith is going to move into that Jock role. So quick shout out to when we talk about him. I love him. But I also think that they might do something similar with Lourdes. I don't know if he'll jump into platoons and he'll go into DHs. I think he might just sit a few more games. And I think McCarthy has locked himself into a lot of roles, and they got guys like Pavin and Grichuk, not DHs, that aren't going to play. So blah, blah, blah. I say all of that stuff to say, like, outside the top 200, if Lourdes is hitting three again, it's great. He's going to hit 20 homers. He's going to put up some good RBIs. If you go and look here on ATC side, they've got him at 17 homers, 72 RBIs, and a 270 batting average. It's hard to find really good batting average for middle of the order guys outside the top 200. So I think he's like a really cool fifth outfielder that you can get in a prime hitting spot with the Diamondbacks. But I'm a tad concerned that maybe he plays a few less games, because I really do think the Diamondbacks might implement more of these platoony situations. And they've got a few of those guys. And like, I'm not right about this at all, but I did say once they signed that deal with Perdomo, look out for Lawler to play in the outfield. They didn't say a word about it. They just said like, hey, when he's ready to play, he'll play. I still think that could be maybe him getting time in the outfield, and then he would join some of those platoons as well. So yeah, I'd say I'm a little over lukewarm on drafting Lourdes Gurriel. Good deal, but I don't think it's like a league winner.
1 second, please. All right, Bobby, what are your thoughts on Lourdes Gurriel Jr.?
Yeah, I think, the one thing I'll say is maybe he gets a little more time at DH. Maybe that's what resting is. But I do think that even if he gets more rest, he played 133 last year. So I think that's probably 130 is probably the line that you're looking at. Gurriel's just a super high floor guy. You know exactly what you're getting from him. You're getting decent runs, decent batting average late. I think the power could tick up a little bit. You just never know with that. So, 20 homers, 70, and a decent batting average. He's four or five categories you can get late in your league. Bubba, Bubba and Bloom, online championship that I did the other night for 4.5 hours, by the way, $6 I got Lourdes for super late.
Yeah, got cheaper than I did. Good.
Just a great deal on a high floor guy. So I just think if you have taken risks, this is the exact guy that you want because the floor is so high.
Like him and like Alec Burleson, like just take those two and get 20 homers, good batting average, some runs in RBI. I will agree with you. The one interesting thing with their platoons is if they wanted, Lourdes could play the right side DH platoon and Grichuk can play in the outfield, where when you had Jock there, really like Jock was just DHing. You now have two platoon guys that can go into the field so they can move some stuff around. So I just don't want to see the games go down for Lourdes. I think that's the thing that's holding me back. He was at 513. If they're saying they need to rest him more, are we going under 500 at bats? That's what I wouldn't like to see, because it's like, we already need maximized games, but like him and dudes like Alec Burleson, they're the same type of player. Like you said, you took some volatility. You took like James Wood, maybe took Jason Dominguez, and you have one other really great one. Take some safe guys at the end. Lourdes, Burleson, those are safer dudes.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I agree. And that'd be the only thing that would bug me is the at bats, but maybe like, Bogman was also saying that means he slides in for some DH once in a while or this or that, and hopefully keeps him fresh. So the floor is what I love in a 15 and 12s. I haven't drafted him once. In 15s, I'm like, okay, I love the floor. Let's go to Eugenio Suarez, the guy you mentioned at the start of the show. Was basically Jordan Lawler was basically just rehabbing his ankle to take third base in DFA Eugenio at one point in time. Then he turns on the second half from the gods. Life is good. ADP sitting around 162, which is about 40 picks different than Chapman. They're usually buddies in ADP world, which is fun. Boggs, where are we at in Suarez bouncing back? His projections pretty much still have him doing his thing.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he can pick up where he left off. That's what you want. Hit 307 in the second half, 20 of his 30 bombs. We're in the second half. He just caught fire in that second half and went absolutely nuclear. So hopefully we can get that. But I think what we've seen from Suarez in his career is exactly what you should expect. Is I have no idea. You know what I mean? Like he could come out like gangbusters, but he's unbelievably streaky. He gets in these bad down ticks and then really hot streaks. So much better in a daily league where you can move him in and out of your lineup, obviously. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I have him currently. He is my 14th third baseman. His ECR is at 14. And I'm not like, I have a couple guys on the Diamondbacks higher that I'm clearly a homer for. Not a lot, though. I think I have Naylor one spot below. I have Suarez right in line. I have Carroll right in line. I think more my homerness probably shows up a little bit more on the pitching side. But, yeah, I think that Suarez is a good option at third base. And I'm not as down on third base as I am second base, but it's not great. After you get through, you know, kind of that mid range, like everybody gets a starter, your CI is not usually coming from first or from third. It's probably coming from first. So, yeah, I think Suarez is a good late third option.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. I'm not forcing the hand on Eugenio, but if he falls and it fits the build, I'm zero problems with it at all. Anything to add to that, Welsh?
Yeah, I would just say the only thing I'd add is you mentioned Chapman. I would prefer Chapman over Suarez, even with ADP different. Because what's the difference between them right now in ADP?
The other night is around 40, but it's funny because this is where auctions are fun. They almost go at the same price still in auctions.
Yeah.
So I
do feel like when if Chapman goes, Suarez goes not too much further. I mean, 40
I have
points,
Chapman at 10. I'm way higher on Chapman.
Yeah, like if it's like 40 points, I don't know, maybe. I'm just worried about Suarez's batting average the first half. What's the real story of him? You know what his if you look at his per month, it looks like Lawrence Butler. And what I mean by this is Lawrence Butler, the first 3 months, trash, trash, trash. And then what do we find out? He had this big hitting change. He changed his stance. He changed his approach. And then boom, it's like the same thing happened with Suarez. It's like garbage, garbage, garbage. You're going to get cut. And all of a sudden he's hitting 300 through the rest of the way. So what version is that? The ballpark holds a lot of extra stuff. I don't particularly love like 230 batting average players, even though I guess I mentioned Carroll. I guess a positive would be his expected batting average is close to 250 with 30 plus home run power in a, you know, really good right-handed ballpark to hit homers. So yeah, maybe he's actually probably more of a target than I'm giving him credit for, but I don't think I've drafted him once. I don't think I have any shares in mocks or anywhere I've had in Eugenio Suarez. But when you're chasing 30 plus homers post 150 in that general range, like you can't do much better.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, you mentioned Jake McCarthy earlier. This has been a name that has been up in a lot of conversations. Like, you either love him, you hate him. You've been waiting for the breakout. Some think it's going to happen. You kind of hinted at you think it's going to happen this year, Welsh. Jake McCarthy's ADP is 232. We know he runs like crazy. Hits for average, too. So where are you at on Jake McCarthy this year?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'd preface it to say, like, I'm not sure that I'm like, hey, the breakout is going to happen. But it's more along the lines of like, how valuable is 10 homers and 30 stolen bases with a bunch of runs and a good batting average? I think that's actually pretty valuable. And that's where I think McCarthy can be. You know, his profile is really interesting. He started in 2023, but he started to be like, I'm not going to be the guy that's swinging for the fences and trying to barrel up. He took that route of like, I'm going to shorten the path. I'm going to hit across the body. I'm going to just make contact. Because what do you see? You see garbagey barrel percentage, some of the worst hard hit in baseball. But what came with it? He doesn't strike out anymore. He's not a 15% strikeout rate, trying to walk a little bit more. His expected batting average is supportive of where he hit last year. He hit 265 expected, 285 real. He is a monster on the base paths, top 2% of the league in sprint speed. And the guy is going to steal at every opportunity. And then the last thing would be, all right, so what are your opportunities this year? I think Alec is a great defensive outfielder, but so is McCarthy. I don't think Alec is going to take him off the field enough. I think what McCarthy has also done, and this is what I was telling Frank about, you get a lot of these split issues. Well, guess what? McCarthy hits over 280 against both righties and lefties. So he is less of an issue in having to take out in those platoon situations. So good defense, runs, makes a lot of contact, doesn't strike out. That's bad at bats. I think he's going to get more at bats this year. And I think what that's going to do is that is going to equate to over 500 plate appearances. And I think you're going to get a 10-30 season out of him. Looking over on ATC for perspective, they're a little bit lower Ariel is 8 homers, 28 stolen bases, but a 260 average. I just think that is wildly, wildly valuable, especially when people are like, hey, don't chase stolen bases anymore. You can get them late. It's because of Jake McCarthy. You can post 200, you can get 30 stolen bases with a good average, and you can get some runs. Jake McCarthy, man. So I don't think he's going to become like a 20 homer, 40 stolen base guy, but I think he's going to go 10, 30 again. And I think that is being undervalued.
If he hits 10 home runs, that's like a big plus. So
yeah.
Boggs, anything else for Jake McCarthy?
I mean, I think that what Wells said sums it up pretty well with him. The only thing that you need to worry about with McCarthy at all is like a really slow start. That's it. Like if he came out and just was really slow, the D-backs do have other options to play in the outfield. But like Wells said, hit 280 against lefties and righties. He's unbelievable defensively. Like this guy, like Alec Thomas is absolutely a gold glove level guy. I think McCarthy is just beneath him. He made some unbelievable plays when he was getting used to center field last season. So he's not coming off the field for a defensive replacement at all, even for one of the best. Now, Alec Thomas, because Alec Thomas couldn't hit his weight and he's skinny. So, you know, I think that's the only worry I have about McCarthy at all would be a slow start. And he finished off the season so well last year. I don't see that happening. So I'm with Welsh. I do have him a little bit lower than Welsh does, but it doesn't mean I won't take him. So if you're looking for stolen bases late as like your fourth outfielder, this is a great option.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, I was not really in on him at first, but that's why we were degenerates and draft as much as we do. You guys do your mock drafts pretty much weekly. You start to see how it fills out pretty nicely. All right, Pavin Smith, a guy I absolutely love at his price tag this year. It's actually starting to creep up, weirdly enough, but I love the power. I know there's a platoon situation, but at his price, I'm not too worried. I was really excited before Josh Naylor showed up, thinking, okay, this is going to be really cool. But when Pavin Smith, you have an ADP right now of 352, so it's not costing you much at all. Bogman, am I just crazy for this, or should we be excited for Pavin Smith?
No, you should be excited. Heavy side of the platoon, right? He's going to hit versus righties because he's a lefty. And, I mean, I think he can get some time at first base, especially if Josh Naylor isn't playing well at first base. You know, they could just stick Josh Naylor at DH on some of those days and have Pavin play. Sounds like maybe Gurriel is going to get some time at the DH spot as well. So I think those are things to worry about a little bit. D-backs brought back Randall Grichuk also to hit against lefties. So Pavin's probably not going to play those days. So there is a cap to his playing time, most likely, unless there's an injury in the outfield and they need him to play there. But this dude can play, you know, from DH to first to, you know, both corners of the outfield as well. So I think he's going to see a decent amount of time. And yeah, he finished off the year pretty solid last year. The playing time is really the only worry I have about Pavin, because I think he's finally starting to kind of make the right moves. He was on this roster when we lost 110 games a few years back out of necessity. There's just nobody else there. He was not ready for the bigs at that point, but none of them were. That's why they lost 110 games. So I think we have, you know, not the greatest track record, but it was being thrown into the fire a little bit too early in his career. I think he's finally settled in, and I think this is a year he can make a name for himself if he's given the opportunity.
No doubt. Any extra Pavin Smith love or thoughts? Well,
yeah, I mean, I'm really adamant. I'll be honest with you. I was trying to find, I did this episode and I wanted to find, I put these notes, you know, when you put notes in like a wrong place and you're like, I'm a stupid idiot. Oh, maybe I found it. Because like, I think underlying there's so many great things. Unless I can't find it, unless it's here. Oh, no, I found it. Okay, beautiful. So first off, like the main thing that, you know, uncovered with him is Pavin's underlying stats close to identical to Jock as far as a platoon only player. So here are some stuff I got for you. Expected batting average, X slug and barrel were all top 10% of the league when you get him into qualifications, when you get him there. Chase rate was one of the lowest in the league, and a 44% hard hit rate, which was a career high. They used him like Jock last year. 117 of his 137 at-bats were against righties. Against righties, he hit 282, and his primary spot at the time was 5, which would line him up just like Jock. And then this is the other fun one I found. There were 125 players with an 85% or higher contact rate with at least 150 plate appearances. Now, there were only 8 players who had an 85% contact rate, a 10% barrel, and a 100 plus 50 percentile EV. So what that means is the better side of 50% of your exit velocities average 100. So I think everybody can kind of follow that. So great EV, 10% barrel is a big key marker, and 85% zone contact rate or contact rate. Those are huge. Names you would expect: Kyle Tucker, Jordan Alvarez, Corey Seager, Pete Alonso, Jackson Merrill, Ketel Marte. Those are 6 of the 8.
Woo.
The other two, Randall Grichuk on the right side of the platoon, and
your DHs.
And Pavin Smith, of course, because I did this whole thing. So three
guys. Well, you better wrap Pavin Smith in this list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Pavin Smith, 85% contact rate, 10% barrel, and 150 or 100 plus on his 50% EV. He is literally the makings of what they got out of Jock there, and they're going to put him in that role. And I think that's going to allow him to succeed. So as an absolutely free 99 player, I'm more interested in platoon players in fantasy than I've ever been before. Kerry Carpenter's a platoon player. I'm in. Jock Peterson. Give me Jock Peterson in Texas. I just took him in tout. And you know what? In big draft and holds or 15-team leagues, Pavin Smith is absolutely on the board for that platoon. And if you're playing in head-to-head, you can swap out. Like weekly leagues, it's a little bit tougher. But in head-to-head daily change leagues and stuff like that, I mean, I'm laid it out, and they're going to use him like that. And I think he's going to find some. He's not going to be a top 100 player or anything like that. But like, don't be shocked when he puts up a Jock like season.
Got him for $1 in your auction.
Yeah, I was about to say I've seen him go for $1 or reserve rounds in those listener leagues, which is absolutely glorious.
Glad I found that note. I wrote that note in a sleeper.
That's that was a great note, dude. Yeah,
that's a nugget, folks. That's a nugget. And contrary to Jock and Kerry Baum is. Pavin's going a lot later than the two, so which makes it even more enticing.
A lot later.
All right, a couple more hitters here before we head to the mound. Gabby Moreno, Gabriel Moreno, catcher, obviously defensively good, can't stay healthy the whole season, hits for average. I really don't know what to expect because we haven't seen it. Welsh, I'll give you the floor here. ADP is around 185.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of shares of Gabby. I'd love to have Gabby. I think he's awesome. I love the, you know, his ability to make some contact, but it's like it's little for nothing. I mean, last 3 years, what does he have? A combined 13 homers, doesn't steal a bunch. He's just not out there quite enough. I mean, Adrian Del Castillo looks like a better offensive option long-term, but he's the guy. They love Gabby so much. And the prospects of Gabby hitting 3 for a team and playing every day, like I could see him having like a Wilson Contreras like type of career and season, but he's just not there. You know, it's below average, like barrels and hard hits. He doesn't strike. He's a better points league player or even maybe an OBP player, but I'm very much team late catcher. So I guess I could see myself with a scenario of like having him, but I don't. I've never drafted Gabby, and it's not really a Diamondback I'm super interested in drafting. Love him personally, though. Want him on your team, but he's not a great fantasy asset.
Yeah, no Gabby for me. Better real life than fantasy for me. Yep. Anything else, Boggs?
Nah, just no power. You know, and that's it. Really hurts. The 5 homers, you know, 5 to 8 somewhere in that range. Like, and the health. There's just too many questions. So, like Wells said. Love him as a player. Glad that he's on my team. Handles the pitching staff incredibly well. Just not healthy enough, not enough power to produce for you in fantasy.
Speaking of no power, Geraldo Perdomo, great glove, gold glove. Not much else really fantasy relevant. So this might be a quickie. I'll let you figure it out. But Boggs, any thoughts on Geraldo Perdomo?
If you need a guy to bunt, he's your guy. So, I mean, you said everything that needs to be said about Perdomo. Maybe the bat comes out of nowhere. Maybe he gets it fixed or something, but it ain't there yet. So let me see it before it happens. This is Nick Ahmed with a little bit better of a bat.
Oof. Welsh, I do want to ask you about Adrian Del Castillo, who you mentioned a second ago. I have been taking him late because I absolutely love that hit tool. And I've been reading stuff saying they want to get him in the lineup, but I don't know where that fits because they say DH, they say first base, but then they keep bringing guys in. It makes, like, we've talked about the DH situation already. So, like, do you have any like idea of what they want to do with Adrian or what they will do with Adrian this year?
No, I mean, I think this is the classic. You're going to talk up this young player that they love, and the whole season will be like, man, we got to find ways to get him in the lineup. But how can you? Again, you just talked about why Pavin's in there. You've got a guy like Lourdes you want out of the outfield who could go to DH. You've got Grichuk who's designed for that platoon. If Lawler were to get on the team, you have to get him at bats. I think Del Castillo is a guy that he gets in twice a week. He's a head-to-head I get in like a draft and hold when you have like four catchers or something like that and you're interchanging. It's great to have him. If Gabby goes down, Adrian Del Castillo's potential offensive upside is big, 11% barrel rate last year, big home run potential. But he's already got some injury stuff in camp. So he's not much more than a draft and hold player for me.
All right, let's head to the bump here. Bogman said it early on. It's going to be the Corbin Burnes era in Arizona. Signs a team-friendly deal, I would say, to go home to be with his family. So a lot of interesting nuggets there. So Bogman, we'll kick it off with you. Where do you sit on a guy like Corbin Burnes with an ADP of 33?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe that is a touch high. I have him at 37. But I'm super excited to see him in Arizona. Wanted to be here. I believe his phone call to Torrey Lovello was, y'all want to win an S load of games because we're about to, you know. So yeah. I like that Ricky Bobby type of energy from Corbin Burnes. I'm loving it. And, you know, a guy that's going to strike out close to 200 or right around there, 15 wins last season. You know, the team context is still very good in Arizona. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just super excited to have this guy. I think you can expect the ERA to bump up a little bit, right? Last year, his ERA was 2.92. His Sierra was 3.75. I think we have him around, for most places, ATC has him 3.55 to 3.33. Steamer's got him in 3.69. So I think 3.5 is probably closer to what we're going to get from him. But yeah, I'm excited to see him. And, you know, for everything we said about the hitters adjusting to a new league, the hitters have to adjust to the pitchers. So it might be a nice hot start for Burnes as well.
Yeah, Burnes, like you mentioned, the ratios, the strikeouts continue to drop. It's like if the strikeouts come back, it's everyone's saying it, then this is a phenomenal price tag. So that's just kind of, you said you had him 37th, so you have him down a little bit. I have him down a little bit. Welsh, where do you sit on Corbin Burnes?
Yeah, I mean, I loved the signing. I love Burnes. This would probably chalk under one of those things we talk about where, like, I just don't tend to draft him. I'd love to have him. I wish he was cheaper. I just did an episode on Fantasy Pros Pitching Guide with Eno, and we were talking about Corbin Burnes. He has Corbin Burnes at 5. I've got him in that general range. I think, you know, from a positivity standpoint, he had an uptick in his cutter. His cutter came back. He added a mile per hour back onto it from the previous season, which is, I think, just a huge, huge plus for him. The thing that carries over is he had a phenomenal first half, bad-ish second half. He was under 3 ERA in the first half. It was a 3, close to a Sierra in the second half. So, like, did he wear down, blah, blah, blah. I also love that he's a workhorse. He's got 3 straight seasons of, like, 190-plus, and I think that's more valuable than it's ever been before with innings. I think some guys you can literally look, and it's like, if I get 180 out of them, and even if they have a 8K per 9 or something like that, it's like, whatever, I'm getting my innings out of him. That's the extra plus. But back to the problem, I rank Garrett Crochet higher than him or than the consensus. So like where Corbin Burnes is, Crochet's there, and I take Crochet. And then I have a tier difference between Crochet and Burnes. So if Crochet were to go, I'm not like, well, let me go get Burnes. It's like, no, I think Crochet could lead the league in strikeouts, and he's a, you know, expected ERA was under 3. So I really want him. So I just don't find myself drafting Burnes. I think he's going to succeed. I think he's going to have a low 3 ERA. He's going to pick up wins, tons of run support. Maybe he's got 15, 16 wins, to be honest with you, with a better bullpen. It's always a Diamondback stupid issue. Justin Martinez, AJ Puck, maybe they bring someone else in, but I just, I need more of a discount. So if he's going in the 3rd round, I'm probably not going to have him. 4th round, I would be very, very tempted to swoop up Corbin Burnes.
100% agree with all of that analysis. Let's go to Zach Gallen. It used to be the ace of the staff. Obviously, that's Burnes' role now. We saw 148 innings last year, kind of battled some injuries throughout the season. Overall numbers still look very strong. ADP is 124, Welsh. are we still, I think, and Gallen is the dude that he's always been?
Yeah, well, even if he's not at 124, I'm going to take a shot that he maybe can be. So I think he's a fun. I think he's one of the best deals. Like,
Homer got him aside, $9 last night.
That's stupid.
$9?
I got him as my SP5. I took him as my third starting pitcher in the Tout Draft and Hold League, and that is paired with Crochet and Jacob DeGrom. So, but because I took DeGrom, but because I took DeGrom, it's like Gallen is a guy that I want innings. I know he didn't get it last year, but it's also coming off of this just monstrous, like,
yeah,
210 in the regular season. And then he and goes the in and then the postseason. Yeah. So it, like, I think getting in the 180 range is completely doable. ATC projects him at 179. The stuff is still there. And I think coming off of just that crazy workload season, we're going to get kind of back to basics. He threw that knuckle curve a lot more because he knows he can throw it for strikes. And when he didn't have his fastball, I think that was kind of his like gimme. But I think you're going to get more changeups. I wouldn't be surprised that the slider upticks a little bit this year. Again, lots of great run support. Maybe he's pushed down in matchups now that Burns is going to be the top dog. And you also, just as a side note, you're going into like contract time where he can become a free agent, and that plays a role in it as well. But I'm going to play the bounce back on Zach Gallen. He is projected, really, if you compare him to Corbin Burns, they're pretty close projection numbers. They're within like a quarter of an ERA between each other, but it's still like 3.78. I think Zach Gallen is one of the best deals for a workhorse type pitcher who has the potential to be a top 15 SP in fantasy. So yeah, I'm of all the guys here, like, I'd love to have Corbin. I'd love to have Cattell. I'd love to have Burns. The costs are a bit prohibitive based on where I'm at. Can I have Gallen on every team? Absolutely. And I'll take him on every team because he's no longer SP one or two. He's SP three or four at his cost. So I think he's like he's a killer value.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a few shares, like I said. Boggs, are you feeling the same here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the reason why Welsh won't have him in every league because I'm in some leagues with Welsh and I feel the same way. I'm actually surprisingly not the highest ranker on him. Our boy Pizapia is the highest ranker on him, has him at 15 among starting pitchers. I think I have him, his ECR right now is 34. I'm at 25. I paid $16 for him in the auction the other day. So I did not get him. Yeah, apparently $9 for Bubba, 16 for me. But yeah, I think everything Welsh said is exactly correct. And this is a dude with an ace mentality and a perfectionist and all of that. And I think he played more than he should have last year, for being honest. I think he had a little bit of that arm fatigue we saw in his velocity early in the season. I think he probably should have been shut down for a little bit longer. They shut him down right before the All-Star break, just a little bit to get his arm strength back for the second half. I think this offseason is going to do wonders for him. Obviously, unfortunately for us, him not having to put any extra innings in the postseason on his arm is going to help as well. And I think he, like well said, is one of the better deals going right now. So I am all over the bounce back for Zach Gallen this year.
All righty. A pitcher that had two really strong seasons that only made 13 starts last year is one Merrill Kelly. Merrill Kelly is now coming in with an ADP of around 290. So he's not costing you much, but I have not taken that chance yet. Bogman, where do we sit on Merrill Kelly?
Yeah, I think Merrill Kelly is, you know, he came over from Korea. He's a little bit older already, 35. I do think you have to worry after only 13 starts and 73 and two thirds. I think I'm a little bit less inclined to take Merrill Kelly, but if he's around, he could be an innings eater. He could be one of those guys to make a bunch of starts. But at his age, I don't know. If I can get him for cheap, great. But if I can't, I'll leave him out there. And I'm, you know, Welsh and I are Merrill Kelly stands. He went to the same high school as
our high school.
So, yeah, we love Merrill Kelly. But for fantasy, I don't think I can sit here and recommend that he's one of your picks. If you can get him late for a buck, go for it.
Sad thing about that, though, is we did not go at the same time because we were already graduating.
Way later. I know. Yeah.
Bad.
Mark Andrews, too.
Yeah. I think Merrill is at best a streamer. I think that's the spot for it. If he has a nice run, like if he is healthy and the Diamondbacks are clicking and then you got this run where you're like, oh, look, they're playing like, you know, the Marlins, and they're playing the Rockies in Arizona. And then, you know, it's like a good stretch. Like, I'll pick him up and I'll rock him for some starts, but I don't think he's a draft target right now. Health is a big issue. The results haven't, you know, they haven't really been there. His expected bat, his expected ERA, by the way, was almost a full run higher than his actual ERA, closer to five. So I would stick him in the streaming market.
Fair enough. All right, a pitcher that I absolutely love. I know the Welsh loves him. Pretty sure Bogman loves him as well. And that's one Brandon Fott, who did the things we needed to see last year. Got up to 181 innings. Strikeouts are still there. Home runs dipped a bit. Walks dipped a bit. All the good things. And now you got to pay a price tag of 182, which is not bad at all, I think. Welsh, are we all in on Fott this season?
Yeah, for better or for worse, this is one definitely I get picked on about, but I'm still in favor of Brandon Fott. 4.7 ERA last year, 3.78 expected, so about a full run lower expected ERA. His K percentage was up 2%, 24, with his walks around 5, so you're closing in on almost 20-plus K-minus walk percentage, which is good. Fastball sinker, different in really great ways. Sinker raised his ground ball rate to 42%, which was a 10% rise. Sweeper, 35% K percentage. That sweeper had a 143 stuff plus. All other pitches were just below average, but eighth best graded slider in all of baseball, according to Stuff Plus. The second half is where he just got blown up, man. He 3.97 ERA in the first, 5.93 ERA in the second half, which is crazy. And it is all about stamina for him, because this was a wild little note. He had a, you know, you can look like ERAs per innings and stuff. And obviously, like, as guys go, you know, it's going to go up. Like, you have a 1 ERA in the first inning, a 3 in the second, blah, blah, blah. Brandon Fott had an 8 ERA in the fifth inning going on. Jeez. So why that kills us clearly is, like, we need you to be good-ish in the fifth to get us a damn win. And he is getting blown out in the fifth inning. So you hope with just time and repetition and the pitch mix working that as long as that is fixed, I truly think, like, if you could just get deeper into games, it's the old, like, Blake Snell, Lazar, you know, like, just go deeper into games. That's going to be the big fix. I think he has the stuff with that sweeper and the sinker to be a dominant pitcher, and he's going to return value. But if you start to see the fifth inning blowing up again, then we're going to get more repeats. But yes, I am a Brandon Fott truther.
Awesome. What about you, Boggs? Are you in the same boat? Because I'm with Welsh on this.
Yeah, I mean, I have him at 45. His ECR is 52, so I'm a little bit higher on him. It's just, you know, the strikeouts are great. You know, it's really about repetitions, like Welsh said, and kind of establishing your game plan and all that. You know, going into his second full season here with the team, I think, you know, this is where you want to see these big adjustments made. And I think for him, it's probably going to go one way or the other, right? It's either going to be, wow, he's a great deal, or meh, put him back into the glob with the rest of these guys, you know what I mean? And move him down. So I think it's one way or the other, but he's got a lot of talent. I think I'd bank on him. I bank on it being more favorable, which makes me excited about this team as, you know, your number 3-4 guy here in this rotation. I think, you know, especially at the beginning of the year, I think that's going to really help him get a nice start.
You mentioned four guys. I'm going to group these last three together because it's a polarizing group based on people, what they really want to see and what might happen. So I'm going to start with you, Bogman. We got E-Rod, we have Jomo, and we have Ryan Nelson. Nelson might be the best of the three, but he might also be the odd man out. So how do you approach this for fantasy?
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I'm just going to bank that Ryan Nelson is going to get this job at some point, right? I think he's the best one. You know, you're paying E-Rod. Dude cannot stay on the field. So that has been unfortunate. But with him and Merrill kind of being questionable in terms of what they can do in innings, it might be both of these guys, both him and Montgomery, to see the field more. I'm hoping we can get rid of Montgomery. He does not want to be in Arizona. We don't want him. But that should have happened already. So maybe an injury in spring training gets him on the move somewhere. We'll see. But I think Ryan Nelson is the best. I think he showed it last year out of this group. And I think, you know, baseball is a meritocracy, not to the extent that other sports are because of the contracts and all that stuff. And he gives some guys a longer leash. But at some point, you just have to say, well, this is our best player at this position. We have to play him. And I think Ryan Nelson will get that eventually.
Yeah, I'm taking him in draft and holds. It's a tough and fab for now, but draft and holds for sure. Welsh, where you at on this trio?
Yeah, I think a team like I think it's the Marlins are like almost 30 million under this really crucial number. And I'm just throwing this out here. Like if they have to get like 30 million on the payroll, or they are going to suffer some severe like fines due to the collective bargaining and the rev share, they should go and trade for Jordan Montgomery, because he's got like a $23 million or $22 million, and the Diamondbacks should give him a prospect and let them take on the money, and that would help them avoid, because Montgomery's not going to be here. The Diamondbacks are holding. I think he gets traded before camp ends. There's a bad relationship there, but also they're not going to do a six-man rotation, and if you trade Montgomery, you still have Ryan Nelson kind of fitting that long relief role for a little bit, because I do believe it will be, if Eduardo is healthy, it will be Eduardo. That'll be the guy, and Ryan Nelson will be a second half player. The thing is Kelly and Eduardo don't stay healthy. So that's why Ryan Nelson is the best pitcher of this group. I think he's a really great gamble, but I think Eduardo is going to be the guy. And I think Montgomery is going to get moved. And I would love for them to really truthfully take Montgomery in a prospect, trade it off to a team and get some more bullpen help. I know we'll probably talk about them next, but I would say Ryan Nelson is your draft and hold stash. If Merrill Kelly or Eduardo get hurt, Ryan Nelson would be a great guy to start the streaming process on, but there's some really interesting K numbers in his that he could be a very viable number five.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Nelson. Yeah. I'm with you. Pretty much everything you said. I'm not going to go too much farther there, but I love Nelson and the upside he brings to the table, especially in the strikeout department. Plus NFBC still has him wearing an Oregon Ducks hat, which is hilarious. Let's talk bullpen here. You have AJ Puck, who came over, was very good in the setup role slash get his chances. Justin Martinez, like you said at the beginning of the show, he did his thing once in a while too. Right now, Martinez is going as the preferred option with an ADP of, where the heck did he just go, of 179, AJ Puck 243. Welsh, how would you approach this?
So I don't know if I don't have like a good insight to it. I think a lot of people are telling us it's going to be Justin Martinez. My personal feeling is it's going to be AJ Puck. I will tell you, I do think the Diamondbacks will implore AJ Puck will be the, was it the fireman they like to say, like, and if they're playing the Dodgers and you've got, you know, Mookie and Otani coming up at the start of an inning in the eighth inning, they're going to bring in AJ Puck. He'll be the high leverage guy. You'll bring in Justin Martinez in the ninth inning to shut out games where they're going against the bottom of an order. But I also think there's going to be opportunities where AJ Puck, if all things considered, if there's not one of those high leverage situations they're worried about, I think AJ Puck will be saved for the ninth. I kind of think he's going to be the guy. I do think they'll both get opportunities. I think at the end of the day, AJ Puck is going to have more, but I also think like it doesn't provide clarity, because like what everyone wants is like, I'm taking Justin Martinez and he's the guy, or, hey, look, I'm super smart and I'm taking AJ Puck and he's the guy. I think you're going to get Justin Martinez have like 12 saves. And I think AJ Puck is going to have like 20, and there might be like four from Kevin Ginkle. Ginkle's another one that they're throwing out there. And this is also not saying that they don't go and trade for somebody. Finnegan could have been an option, but he re-signed with the Nationals. But it doesn't mean that, you know, this team doesn't go out and look for another guy that gets thrown into the rotation. But I don't think Justin Martinez is, until they tell us, by the way, Martinez is the guy. Great, you can throw 100, but he also can be pretty inconsistent. AJ Puck has a long storied history, was a great reliever. I think he would be primed to be that guy, but him being in that leveragey fireman role is what will lose him some opportunities. So none of them are going to be defined. I just don't think Martinez is like deserving of being this crazy, crazy high end guy. You know what I mean? Like take him in the 150s because he's going to be the guy.
What about you, Boggs?
Yeah. I mean, we just heard Torey Lovullo talk about this yesterday and he said, yeah, I don't know. He said it's
great.
That's helpful, Torey.
It's spring training. What he said at the beginning was, I'm just going to let them compete during spring training, and whoever pitches the best is going to earn the role. So, and they're all scoreless so far in spring training, which is great. It's between Puck, Martinez, and he has Ginkle in there as well. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, like Welsh said, for them to add someone else during the season as well, I think is on the table. So,
Also, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Justin Martinez is the seventh inning guy. Ginkle goes eight, and then they throw AJ Puck in as the ninth guy. And by the way, Ginkle and Puck could both play the fireman in different situations for righty-lefty matchups. So just throwing that out there, that I don't think Martinez could be as far off as maybe being kicked out of the top two. That's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not, but this is what I'll say, and this is just how I would do it if I was Torrey. I would say we saw Martinez close last year, and he was great at it. So let's just leave him there. And Puck is the best pitcher of this group. Let's have him come in when we need him, whenever. And Ginkle is pretty good in that role as well. So for me, if I know that Martinez has that mentality to do the ninth and close it out, let's keep him in there and let's throw Puck more and when we need him. So that's how I would do it. That's how I kind of think the season will start. But if Martinez gives up a bunch of runs in spring, it's not going to be him. He will be dropped down to that seventh inning role, like Welsh mentioned. So spring training is really going to determine all of it. So if you're spending, be careful. I would say don't overpay for any one of these guys in, you know, draft capital or in your auctions right now, because Torrey doesn't even know who it's going to be.
I'd say the one thing I want to say is, like, of the three speculative save players in my world, AJ Puck is in the top three. These are guys that do not have closer roles. To me, it's AJ Puck, it's Jason Adam, and it's Lucas Erceg. Carlos Estevez kind of ruined Erceg a little bit. If I'm drafting relievers that do not have defined roles, Adams, Puck, and Erceg are my top three options that I want to have, that I think that can get a decent amount of saves or can fully take over jobs right now. And I think that's maybe, even if you take Martinez, you should look at Puck in that way as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, with Martinez, I don't mind him. He feels like Camilo Duvall, electric stuff, walks the farm.
Better attitude.
Better attitude for sure. That's not a high bar to clear, but he's got that. But I love Puck also. Like, Martinez, I think, is, I'm kind of on more bog side of this one, but I love Puck, I think, as much as Welsh does, if that makes sense. Because
I think Puck's the best pitcher. Yeah. And I think he would be best in that role out of all of them.
But like you're saying, draft Puck in like all 12s and deepers. I think you're going to get 10 plus saves. You have a chance to get 5 plus wins, maybe closer to, like, he's going to get tons of strikeouts and ratios. Like, they're going to use him a ton. And that's where I think he still has tremendous value. Where, you know, some people, if they're down at the token closer, they just ignore him. Don't ignore AJ Puck, is what we're all trying to say, I think. Yeah. All right, two more questions. First to you, Welsh. What prospects should we be looking at for an impact this season?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. So, I mean, Jordan Lawler doesn't count. He's not technically a prospect. He debuted in 2023, but Lawler's going to be there. I just want to throw that back out. I still am going to hold firm that I think they could go the Jackson Merrill route, and you could see him play in the outfield, and that could be part of that whole situation. But, you know, it's kind of fluid. So if you're talking about, like, actual prospects that we could see this year, there's an outside chance, just throwing this out here, Ryan Waldschmidt, who they drafted, college bat. If they suffered a lot of injuries in the outfield, I think that could be an option, because if you look internally, they have a lot of younger guys. Slade Caldwell, Drew Jones, these guys are not ready for the majors. Gino Grover is another guy who could get, if there's major injuries, but he's an infielder. So really the closest outfielder of impact that's not like a quad A type of player, I think, would be a guy like Ryan Waldschmidt, and he could be an option. But I will say to you, I don't think there's an impact prospect that you're going to be, like, kicking the doors over. There's a couple pitching guys. Yumin Lin, if he were to get some spot starts, he can go deep. I watched him do a rookie ball game where he had a complete game. You don't ever see that. He went 8 innings. He just threw the whole thing. Pretty dynamic breaking pitches. I think he's a guy that is, like, kind of, you know, getting closer to the fray of far of coming up. But again, like, he's kind of the only pitching prospect. The last one would be if you have corner infield issues between Gino Grover, who was part of the Diamondbacks analytical drafting. He's kind of positionless, but he can play second or third or first. But Ivan Melendez, he would be the Hispanic Titanic, as they called him at Texas. I think that would be for the bat.
Hook him.
Yeah, that's the nickname in
Hispanic
Texas.
Titanic, baby, let's go.
That's amazing.
It is. I would say, like, I don't think he's defensively ready, but the guy's 25 years old. He can hit 30 homers. I would look out for him. It just, again, the Diamondbacks' problem is they've got a whole bunch of guys that are not quite quite major league ready. You know, they brought a few of them up, like Christian Mania was one of them, Yelber Diaz. Oh, one other one, maybe
Dylan Ray. I love Yelber, man. I wish they'd use him more.
Yeah, I know. Yelber would be another guy. Dylan Ray was in the AFL. That's another guy that you could see in some spot starts. But Diamondbacks would not be the team I'm looking for impact prospects from.
Gotcha.
You got, by the way, Welsh, just when you're at the D-backs, ask him how to say his name, because they say Gilbert the broadcast, I know. But I don't know if that's right. Yeah, Gilbert Diaz.
So yeah, I would never have guessed that. I would never.
Me neither. It's why. So
like, I know Spanish. I know it's probably not Spanish. He's from a different Latin country, but yeah, that's I would never have thought of that.
Yeah, you are right about that. I think it's like Gilbert.
Yeah, well, just ask him. Just get clarity, because some, I don't know. You know, sometimes they like to put a little extra spice on some of these names, these announcers. Yeah. So I don't know. But Welsh is going to give you all the info on prospects, obviously.
Oh, I know. That's why I was going to tee you up for the next question. It was no disrespect. It'd be like,
no.
We're doing fantasy football. We're talking defense. We're going to Boggs. It's just the way this world works. So final question, Bogman, start with you. What are your expectations for 2025? Realistic expectations for 2025.
I mean,
I always have to say that because it's biases on this show. Realistic expectations.
That's true. But I think I do think that this team is in a World Series window. Now, I don't think they can win the division. I think the Dodgers have that wrapped up with all the money they spent and all the talent that's on that team. You can't expect them to win the division. But to be the best wild card team should be the expectation, and to be in, you know, a group of 4 to 6 teams that can win the World Series. I think that is what this team is right now. So anything short of that is a failure in my opinion. So, you know, for a small market team or a smaller market team like the D-backs to have as much talent as they have and to have this window open, that should be the expectation. So I think a playoff run deep into the playoffs is what you should realistically say.
No, I don't disagree. What about you, Welsh?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the expectation as a Diamondback fan would be to get back to the World Series. I think you want to see them be at the top of the division. I don't think third is reasonable. I think they need to be second behind the Dodgers. They need to be better than the Padres. Padres team that's going to be fielding like Jason Hayward and Tercer Ornelas in the outfield. Like, they've got to be able to be above competition on that. And they're one of the higher spending teams in baseball. That's the other thing that's weird about the Diamondbacks. Spending over $200 million on their payroll. They're very, very aggressive. So I think from an expectation standpoint is they're not willing to fall behind. They're aggressive in whatever the trade market is needed. They keep pace. They don't need starting pitchers, so you can be hyper-focused, and they've got to make a playoff run. And really bounce backs as well. Like, you want to see Marte be 90% of what he was. But you want to see Burns be 90% of what he was last year. But you want to see Zach Allen and Corbin Carroll. And I would tell you, from a selfishy fantasy standpoint, I think if Corbin Carroll has another bad year, that's gonna reverberate across the team. So from a very individual standpoint, I think Allen and Carroll both need to have bounce backs for this team to meet any of those expectations. Kind of circling back to the top of the episode where it was like, what was the disappointment from last year? The thoughts, it was like, well, Carroll and Gallen at the top, they were table setters, and that team did not make the playoff because they both struggled.
And because of their aggression, some of the guys that Welsh mentioned, and potentially Jordan Lawler as well, might be starting for other teams by the end of the year if, you know, the D-backs need to make a move. So just because they're blocked in Arizona doesn't mean they're blocked from playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Like you said, every one of us thinks the Dodgers win it all, but doing these team previews, the wild card race is going to be phenomenal. Yes. There are some really, really good teams, at least in the East and the West. And you could probably throw a couple in the Central, honestly. Like, it's going to be a battle for those.
Yeah, Pirates are going to be better with the pitching staff they've got.
Interesting.
Yeah, Reds. I completely agree.
Reds will be better.
I think Reds are a playoff team. So I agree.
It's going to be some fun baseball. Let the Dodgers go. Get ready for their whatevers. But we'll figure out the rest. Before we head out, boys, remind everybody where they can find you. Twitter, ITL, the work. Start with you, Boggs.
Yeah, at Bogman Sports on the Twitter. I'm doing a lot of fantasy football content now. Also, baseball stuff over at ITL. My boy CK and I are doing a War Room podcast talking about the NFL draft, going through the prospects by position. We got up to offensive linemen this week, and we have the whole offensive side done. So you can check that out. The Dynasty podcast over at Fantasy Pros with myself and Pat Fitzmaurice and Ryan Wormley as well. We just went over each position there. And of course, all the mock drafts were up to mock draft 7.0. We just did an ESPN head-to-head points league this week. So lots of baseball coverage over it in this league as well.
What about you, Welsh?
At Is It The Welsh, obviously all the ITL stuff, been a little hiatus on Prospect One, but we're about to do the Prospect One P1 ADPs, which is going to kick back into everything. And part of the hiatuses that happen sometimes too is like everything I'm doing at Fantasy Pros. There's a lot going on there. We're doing, I think we had 5 episodes this week that we put out. We got our Fantasy Fest coming up. Just go and check it out. YouTube.com/FantasyProsMLB. Also, Fantasy Pros MLB on wherever you listen to podcasts. Pizapia, myself, Bubba comes on, Orico, Bogman. We got the whole crew in there. Really great videos if you like some of the video production. We had an insane series this week where I interview Eno, Pizapia interviews Pollock, and then Orico gets both of them in an ADP battle of pitching episodes. So you want to digest some pitching, listen to all 3 of those episodes and with different hosts talking to them, and then make sure you're tuned in. Like I said, Bubba and Bloom, by the way, Ryan Bloomfield, baseball writer of the year, just while we were recording on FSWA, writer of the year. Congratulations to Bloomfield. Bloomfield and Bubba will be on Fantasy Fest. What is it? March 12th. Wednesday, March 12th, 3 p.m. Eastern to 7 p.m. Eastern. We've got Lance Brozdowski. We've got Eric Cross. We've got you boys. We got Frank and Chris Towers. We got a huge, huge crew. So hopefully people want to come and check it out.
Yep. Always follow these guys if for some weird reason you're not, but some of the best out there, best dudes, best content, you name it. They got it. Is It The Welsh? Bogman Sports, ITL. Love you guys. Thanks for joining me as always.
Love you,
you find me on Twitter at BDentric. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 746. Catch you on next time.
Peace.